Can't get enough wrestling talk? Well, check out Ringside Rant with top guys RJ and Justin, the kings of ranting. The new shows drop each Friday morning at 9 Eastern, and it'll take you back to the good old days of pro wrestling, but also the not so good days. Ringside Rant is available on all podcast platforms, as well as full press coverage, Wrestling with Johnners Network, and the Shining Wizards Network. You can also follow the show on Twitter @_ringsiderant. It's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. New shows drop Friday morning at 9 Eastern. That's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. A couple of top guys doing top guy stuff. It's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. New shows Friday mornings at 9 Eastern.
It's Friday. It's 9 a.m. You know what that means. Another great episode of the Ringside Rant is with you this week. And introducing your host, he is Cincinnati's favorite son, J.D. Justin Davis. And from Rochester, New York, he is the man with the magical voice, RJ. And as always, welcome to Ranters Nation. Welcome back to the Ringside Rant. I am the man with the magical voice. He is every goose's worst nightmare, Mr. Poundwater Dave. Dave, welcome back again. Justin's still on assignment. He's making the big bucks on the umpiring tour near you. So thanks for coming back again.
He's a heel. He's a heel for sure.
Well, now he is. Everybody's like, oh, I miss Justin, but Dave's all right.
He's a baseball umpire. Is there anything worse? They're on the Mount Rushmore of the worst things in the world right now is baseball umpires.
What's worse than being a baseball umpire? Is there anything? Basketball, maybe?
Oh, we're talking about officials?
Yeah.
Baseball umpires are firmly number one. I mean, I'm a wrestling referee, but I suck on purpose.
Well, yeah, because yours is predetermined to suck. You know, yeah, baseball referees, they just suck on by mistake, I guess.
So, yeah, I mean, ain't nobody calling for a machine to take my job, Daddy. Yeah.
Well, there you go. You can get that on a new shirt. Go to Poundwater Dave @PoundwaterDave to find all your new shirts for him.
That's going to be the first Poundwater Dave referee shirt. Ain't no machine going to take my job, Daddy.
There you go. Trademark it now. If anybody else takes Dawkins, it, you're screwed. Dawkins, take it. Dawkins, all you, bud.
Isolate this clip so Dawkins can get on it.
There you go. We'll isolate at that timestamp. Starting the month off Bash at the Beach. Each week this month, we're going to be doing Bash at the Beach starting this week with 1996. For you wrestling fans, you know how synonymous that the 1996 Bash at the Beach was, forever will be. This event 26 years ago on the 7th of July, as we're recording. It's hard to believe it 26 years ago. Daytona Beach, Florida, Ocean Center, 8,300 fans, man. I didn't watch it live myself, so I obviously go back and watch it now. So
I did watch it live, and some of it I remembered vividly. Mm-hmm. Some of it I didn't remember. Made me feel really, really old. I'll say that. Made me feel old.
Well, it's funny to look back at these now too. It's like, holy crap. Whenever Gavin and I will be watching an event, he's like, Daddy, how old are you at this time? Oh, I was, 2, 4, whatever. Oh, 26 years ago. It's like, holy shit.
Well, this is a good one for us to do. Yeah. Cause there's a lot of things we're going to point out, and I won't jump ahead, but just, there is some serious innovation. Innovation on this show, and I can't wait for us to get to it.
You know, Dave, somebody else that has a lot of innovation himself is Mr. Rich Palladino, so let's send it up to the ring to him right now.
It's the opening contest.
Dave, so we had before this event, if you go on to Wikipedia or any of the internet websites to check out the card for this event, you're going to notice there's quite a bit of matches before the actual first match, which was Rey Mysterio and Psicosis. A lot of this time, they're doing a lot of the Saturday night tapings here, as well as a dark match, just to not to spend too much time on it, but we have the Rock and Roll Express, Ricky and Robert, defeating Fire and Ice, Scott Norton, Ice Train in a tag team match. You have Eddie Guerrero defeating Lord Steven Regal. It just goes to show you how deep these rosters are at this time.
Oh, yeah. And I wish, looking back on it, I would have appreciated Eddie Guerrero and Steve Regal as much then as I did now, as I do now. Oh, I mean, they were, you just, I always thought Regal was kind of impressive because Regal always came off as a legitimate badass, but
yeah.
But Eddie was, you know, they were bringing in, that's the thing about WCW, they were bringing in all these smaller wrestlers. They were bringing in cruiserweights, you know, they were kicking the shows off with them. And it was different.
Sure.
It was real different. So it was what you kind of put up with waiting to get to what you came to see. And then at this time period, I was still heavily invested in Four Horsemen.
Right. It even goes to show you, too, you got the WCW World Tag Team Champions, the Harlem Heat, Stevie Ray, Booker T, losing by disqualification to the Steiner Brothers. As we go through this card, you would think, holy shit, you really have to put these, at least three of these matches, could very easily be on the main card. And like I said, you could even fantasy book it when you're listening to this show or even when you're watching this show. But man, it's just, as usual, you know, WCW will start here with the Cruiserweight Championship or Cruiserweight Division, excuse me, with Rey Mysterio taking on Psicosis.
Very young Rey Mysterio.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Psicosis, and my wife was like, who's the guy with all the hair?
Psicosis.
And at one point I was wondering, I wonder if that's all his hair. Surely he wasn't wearing a wig in 96.
Not 96. I know later on when he'd lose his, mask, he'd be, you know, short hair. But it's interesting to think about a lot of these masked wrestlers, whether it be Psicosis or Ray. We knew Ray had short hair, but like Juventud Guerrera, Ultimo Dragon, any of these guys that would be fully masked. Hey, do they really have long hair? Or is it a wig or something? But
that's just what, and I probably didn't think of it then because long hair wasn't in the 90s, wasn't all that uncommon. But I was looking at it last night thinking, because today everybody wears extensions.
Sure.
So, they got that match got in the ring and they bring in Mac Tenay to call the action. This is something, and maybe a hot take, but Bobby the Brain Heenan was getting on my nerves during this match.
Well, I think he's truly playing that heel-esque character as far as a commentary goes. I get what you're thinking and I understand.
It annoyed me more. I didn't think, and I'm sure that at the time it was Heenan being Heenan, and I probably even laughed at him. But I don't know. At 56 years old, Bobby Heenan's never got on my nerves before on play by play. But last night, it just seemed like, hey, kids, get off my lawn.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I never noticed that before. It's just an observation looking through a different lens.
But I think he got a little perturbed towards the end too. Once he got towards the end of his WCW run here, I'm not saying it was anywhere close to this, but
well, even Shivani didn't know what to call the stuff, which, you know, some people say that Shivani without Excalibur, he don't know what to call it today, but
true.
But I laughed because Tenay was calling, I mean, Shivani called a Hurricanrana a double Frankensteiner. But who the hell knew what it was? Nobody was doing that stuff.
In 96, nobody was doing it, but you could even go back to, you go over to the other channel, go over to WWF. You're not, you're seeing guys like Six or X-Pac or 123 Kid. You're seeing guys like Owen Hart. Those are pretty much the, or Shawn Michaels with the Rockers. But it's, those are pretty much the only guys that are really doing any type of high flying moves.
And whoever,
WWF,
be it Eric Bischoff or who, I don't know who made the decision that Mac Tenay needed to be there to call these matches. Mm-hmm. But that's a good piece of work. It's that you brought a man in that understood that culture, and he was calling these moves, things we've never heard them before. Sure. Never heard of. And even Dusty was like, whatever Tenay said. You know, Dusty was, and Tony was commenting, and Bobby Heenan was, what are these words coming out of your mouth? I mean, about, because mm-hmm. Tenay was teaching the crowd what all these fantastic moves were. Yeah. And that's what got me, and that's the innovation. So really, whoever was smart enough to put Tenay in that position did everybody a service, because he was educating. And even to the point where the post-match interview with Conan, when Mean Gene was with Conan,
right.
Mean Gene asked Conan to explain that finish to him. And yeah. Conan broke the finish down to what it was called and what it was turned into.
Sure. Yeah.
And I mean, that was like Mean Gene legitimately as a shoot wanted to know what the fuck just happened.
Wait, but that's the thing between Mean Gene, Dusty, and Bobby, they grew up in that era. They wrestled in that era they didn't know. And I think you got to give a lot of credit to WCW, whoever was involved with that, to get, maybe it was Eric, maybe it was somebody else, but to get these guys, first of all, on first, and second of all, you know, keep pushing them each and every week, because they were doing something that the WWF wasn't doing. And that was the cruiserweights. That was the working relationship with AAA, with New Japan, to get these guys to come over and to work with the WCW guys.
I think Bobby Heenan, if I'm just guessing, I think Bobby Heenan doesn't like it. I don't think it's Bobby Heenan's style of wrestling. And I think he was kind of kicking and screaming throughout it. Like,
he wanted to give his 2 cents on it, no matter
what are we doing? What are we doing? I think Dusty and Mean Gene were kind of like, what did I just see?
Yeah. Just what am I seeing? Go with it, kind of work off of Tenay, what he was saying.
It don't make it. I'm sure the psychology of it
right
didn't make sense to him. I think Dusty and Mean Gene and even Tony were kind of amazed at what they were seeing. But I think the old school and Bobby Heenan, I think his true disdain for what he was seeing was kind of coming through, that it was too different for him. I think that's how it came off to me. And that's just hindsight looking back at it. That's what I heard last night in the commentary.
Well, even to something that I grasp, I don't know if it actually happened or not, is how WCW didn't take advantage of all the merchandise possibilities with the cruiserweights, whether they be masks or whether they, you don't even have to do masks. You could do some sort of anything else revolving around the whole mask-esque characters.
Well, merchandising is going to change later on in the show.
Oh, without question. Obviously, we're going to see that with the main event.
That's going to change. But on one hand, somebody had enough vision to know you needed to put somebody on commentary that could call that type of match, mm-hmm. but you didn't have anybody with enough vision to realize that you could sell the crowd the gimmicks and t-shirts.
Well, too, in 96 too, you're going to have a lot of these kids now, me being one of them, where your kids in 96. Now it's like, now I'm starting to see the other side of it, where my son wants, and I'm sure with your grandkids, they want the merchandise. They want the shirts. They want the hats. They want the masks. They want the whatever. They want the belts. They want this. They want that.
My grandson wants belts.
Well, he came to the right. He's in the right household anyways.
My grandson wants belts. He's got every replica toy, the toy style. Like you get it.
The
Walmart.
Smaller ones. Yeah.
But he's got every wrestling belt toy. I mean, my wife got on there and started buying them. When you buy them on Amazon, they don't even come in a box. They come in plastic.
Oh, right.
Which is fine, because you don't have them stretched out that sit on the out on the shelf.
Yeah.
But yeah, my grandson's got luchador masks. If we took him to a WWE event, he got the John Cena, the Summer of Cena.
Mm-hmm.
They started selling the necklace again,
mm-hmm.
like the wrap necklace.
Right.
He got that 1 year. He's got the Mysterio mask. He's got wristbands. I mean, the kids always want merch. Yeah. So you're right.
They're ready to go. But you know, one match that you really didn't want to get any merch from was this next one. We saw John Penta, AKA Earthquake, AKA the Shark, taking on Big Bubba, AKA the Big Boss Man, in a Carson City Silver Dollar match. So a little context to this, for those of you that don't know what that is, basically they put a sack full of silver dollars on top of a pole and they basically have to wrestle, and whoever climbs the pole to get the sack full of silver dollars can use them on said person, which, looking at it now, you got John Tenta, biscuit shy of 300 pounds, if not over.
No, he's every bit of 350, 360.
Yeah. So he's okay. Biscuit shy of, you know,
400.
Same thing with Big Bubba Boss, great trailer. Why the hell would you put him in this type of match?
And we had the benefit of having listened to both Eric Bischoff and Tony Schiavone talk about this match on their podcasts,
mm-hmm.
about that the poll, nobody had the thought to maybe not put the poll so high.
Right.
I noticed, and it might have been, I don't remember at the time, I'm sure that was piss break match for me,
sure.
back in the day.
Sure.
Those two guys wouldn't have done anything for me at that time. The poll looked even higher than it looked higher than what it actually was. Because
yeah.
when Bubba got up on the top and he was just standing there, and I didn't see what happened where he got crotched.
Yeah.
But I was looking and thinking, there's no way he climbed that pole. And the way that it was attached, it looked like it was pretty solid. I was looking at the straps going around it. I don't think there was a way they could have tore it down.
No.
And so,
well, and
it just wasn't a good match.
Yeah. Well, and you had Jimmy Hart out here with Big Bubba too. So obviously he'd be making his presence felt. Obviously that would obviously be a given if you know anything about him as a manager, but I just found it interesting. That's all. And you know, Brian Haremza wanted to know as well, is did either of you honestly believe that John Tenta or Big Bubba would make it up that pole to get the knockdown?
No. And even
Jimmy Hart had a heart issue too.
It was either Bobby Heenan. I think Bobby Heenan's the one that said it, is that this is the time that you get your manager
involved
to get up that pole and get the sock for you.
Right.
While you keep the other guy. They actually told what needed to happen. And I don't know if that was maybe thinking somebody in the back. I'm guessing the referee had a earpiece at that time. Maybe that was saying, hey, we got a problem. This is how it needs to go. Ref, tell them that Jimmy Hart needs to get that sock down. I don't know if that was if anybody was thinking that big, but the finish was laid out on commentary earlier in the match.
Yeah.
And so I kind of felt like that's how it was going to go, because I want to say it was Bobby Heenan. It could have been Dusty, but one of them made that point. And I'm pretty sure it was Bobby Heenan because it was utilizing the manager.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, my key takeaway from this match was the finish. When Tenta hit Bubba in the face with the sock, because he unloaded on him, and then he turned around and dumped the silver dollars on him,
mm-hmm.
and put the silver dollars on his eyes. I don't know if maybe the silver dollars were wrapped up in the sock and something soft enough not to break his jaw, because he unloaded on him.
Well, yeah, and
that magic of the match looked really good. The finish, yeah. actually utilizing that sock.
Made sense.
That it looked really good.
Yeah. So we're gonna see Gene backstage with Sting, Luger, and Macho Man really setting up this main event, with the three of them taking on Hall and Nash and their mystery opponent. their mystery partner, excuse me. And just kind of just getting that build, man. And that's really what you really would, you think would need for this type of event.
Luger looked fantastic.
Yeah.
But Sting looked like $1 million. I don't think I ever remember Sting looking that cut up, that jacked, and that tanned.
Yeah. Well, if he's tan, he's over. So,
man, Sting, and at this point with Savage, the internet spoilers and rumors were a thing in 1996. I want to say in 96, I was going to a website called Scoops by a guy named Al Isaacs, and his stuff was pretty spot on. So we knew there was a Hogan rumor before this pay-per-view that Hogan could be the third man. But the seed had been planted that Savage could have been turning on him because Savage had the WWF connection. So I remember, and it came back to me last night when I was watching that promo with Savage, that Savage could be that I was thinking at the time that the Hogan stuff could have been a swerve. That there was no way he was going to do it.
Right.
That Savage could have been the third man. And that would have made sense.
Well, we'll obviously get to that later when we get to the main event, but.
Right. I'm just sharing with you what I thought at the time.
Oh, sure.
And what
sure.
came back to me.
Yeah. So we're going to, you know, fly through these next couple of matches. So we give the next, main event the proper amount of time. So we're going to see Diamond Dallas Page defeating Jim Duggan in a tape fist match for Page's Lord of the Rings ring.
Fast forward it all the way through the match.
Yeah.
Watch the finish.
Did Devin Delling wanted to know during this too, is how does a tape fist make your punch any stronger? You have any comment on that?
Well, I mean, you tape your fists to put them in boxing gloves.
Yeah. So the only thing I could think of is it would actually make it tighter. So
yes.
You have more of a fist to actually, it'd be a loaded fist pretty much.
I mean, you're compact.
Right.
And the only reason I know anything about tape fists is just watching them tape up to put their fist in boxing gloves.
Yeah. So that was a little over a five minute match that we can't get back. Next match, we got the Nasty Boys.
It wasn't his best diamond cutter. And I don't know if that was on Page or Dugan.
Yeah, could have been a little bit of both though. But no, we got the Nasty Boys, Sags and Knobs taking on Public Enemy, Rocco Rock and Johnny Grunge in a double dog collar match. This was rough, man. It really was.
Yeah, it was just one. When I heard double dog collar match, I was thinking that it would be all four of them attached in the middle.
Yeah.
And then when I realized it was just that, and I was trying to remember. I mean, I started fast forwarding through it because I wasn't a fan of it then. I'm not a fan of it now.
Yeah.
Now that table didn't break. The table didn't break.
Right.
And I thought, wow. And then there was a table set up that the legs were out. And that was real dangerous that they threw them into the table with the table being turned the wrong way.
Right.
But that table wasn't breaking.
No, it definitely didn't. So move on from that. We got the cruiserweight champion Dean Malenko putting his title on the line against Disco Inferno. Everybody knows my feelings on Disco Inferno.
I don't know your feelings on Disco Inferno.
I just don't like him.
Don't like him as a character, don't like him because
what he says now.
Okay.
I if you like him, wonderful. I'm not gonna disparage anybody that likes him.
I liked the gimmick.
The gimmick itself, I dug the gimmick. I just didn't like the person behind the gimmick.
Right. But I get that. I get that. I hear people. One of my favorite things when they bash Disco online, I don't defend what Disco says.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what Disco says.
Right. Oh, I don't either.
I'm just saying. But what I'm saying is I always tell them, I'm going to say, you know, Y'all hate on Disco all you want, but he performed in front of more people than your current favorite will ever perform for in their life.
No, I get that. And I
because
get that.
Because there were 6 million people a week watching when Disco was on Nitro. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying he drew the house. I'm just, that's my way of digging at people. Because when people start trolling, it just, I hate trolls. So I troll back a little bit. But I mean, with the fact is, I'm not saying he drew the house, but he got to perform in front of the biggest crowds ever, the biggest audiences. But this match, I didn't expect a lot out of it. Didn't remember a lot out of it, but it was a good match.
Yeah.
It was a very good match.
I'll give him that though. Yeah. Well, he also looks and who,
like, I don't remember Disco Inferno actually being able to wrestle that good.
Right. And I never, you know, Brian brings up a good point too, is he never really viewed Disco as an actual cruiserweight.
No.
Did you find it odd that he got the title shot over Ray or Psychosis or even Juventud?
Yes. I thought it was an odd choice for a cruiser because he looks like a heavyweight.
Well, he would make his, you know, he would really make a splash as the TV champ. That's what I remember Disco as, is the TV champion, the TV, you know, that TV title division. You know what I mean? He'd face Regal, he'd face Prince Iaukea, he'd face all those guys, Booker T. Was he a good worker? To a certain extent, yeah, I agree with him on that, but I just, he wasn't for me and still isn't. And right. Like I said, I'm not going to disparage, you know, his work. You know, he wouldn't be in WCW if he wasn't good. I'll give him that.
Right.
And I just, I could care less about it.
and this match showed me that he was more than what I thought he was. I'm kind of giving him flowers because I didn't know that he was the performer that he was, because he's always Disco Inferno, the gimmick on Saturday night. And for him to perform at that level with Dean Malenko, I was really, really, really thoroughly impressed by this match. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. And there was even times that you thought the Disco was actually going to win the championship.
Mm-hmm. No, I get that. And you know, this next, we're going to have a promo with Flair as he's flanked by Woman and Elizabeth with Mean Gene backstage. Another, you know, Gene was one of
tremendous,
one of a kind with these backstage interviews.
Oh, and Woman was just, I loved, and Flair was being Flair. But Woman messing with Gene. And then he dropped the line about the tent pole. And my wife was kind of cleaning up. The grandkids were over, so the toys were out.
Right.
And she's putting all that up, and she heard the tent pole, and that even popped her.
you watch it so many times, it pops me every time. Every time I watch it, it's unbelievable.
I forgot it. But I was watching her messing with him in his ear, and you could tell. And I'd love to know what she was actually saying.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love to know. And my God, Gene was so good.
Yeah.
Gene was so good. And when you could take a Ric Flair on fire promo, and then Gene with that pop, that with that tent pole comment, just, I mean, I was rolling. It was so good.
Yeah. So we're going to see Konnan put his U.S. title on the line against Cedric Flair. Flair is going to go over and become the new U.S. champion.
No reason for it. This did not make any sense to me. Everybody knows.
Why would you? I'm not going to disparage the U.S. title because that's a very prestigious title and very prestigious history. But why put it on Ric Flair? Flair doesn't need it.
He didn't need it at that point.
Flair never, even though he is a 21-time champion, if you listen to the Ric Flair show.
It actually gave me, I thought it was 22 or 23, but
yeah,
at
he
least
21 on his show. When he
counted them, he counted 21 of them.
Some of them are overseas.
But it even gave me a question for the next time there's an Ask Eric.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask, was putting the U.S. title on Rick trying to maybe see if we could transition Rick into the mid-card level champion?
instead. Well, that might have been his idea.
And could have been. And not knowing then what we know now, could we have been maybe going, or maybe it was a missed opportunity that Flair could have been the U.S. champion and done the same thing as when John Cena was the U.S. champion. Because, you know, when John Cena was out there doing the challenge every week, he elevated that U.S. championship belt higher than the world belt.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you can even look at the IC title, too.
Did we need to get the title off of Conan because he was traveling back and forth to Mexico? And maybe, I mean, was there a reason we took it off of Conan? Because I'm a huge Flair fan. And I want to see Flair win all the time.
Sure.
But I watched that match and thought there was no reason to take that off of Conan. And you could have had Flair get disqualified for outside interference. Woman could have got caught using the shoe. She was interfering enough.
Yeah. You could use that as a reason.
She could have got caught. Wouldn't have hurt Flair.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have hurt Conan.
Wouldn't have hurt. And losing Ric Flair doesn't hurt anybody.
Right.
I mean, Flair used he used boots on the top rope.
Mm-hmm.
But with the shoe and the boot on the top rope, and they had to sell that. The commentators had to sell that terrible shoe shot. Oh, it was the hill to the temple. Oh, Dusty goes, yeah, that'll knock you out every time. I mean,
no.
But that was my takeaway from the match. I thought it was a decent match. It was okay.
And, you know, Flair wearing red, you know, Justin and I always used to have it's a running joke. Whenever Flair wore red, he lost. But this is about the only times where he wore red tights and boots and he actually won. So maybe that was, I don't know, maybe that played into it too. I don't know.
My wife asked me why he wears his knee pads around his calves instead of on his knees.
Yeah.
And I said, minuscule calves.
Yeah. If anybody that's listening knows that story, it's a phenomenal story because Flair never liked his calves. So that's why he wore the boots.
It's upper body business.
Or excuse me, the knee pads down around his calves.
So that, and my wife asking me about it though, I laughed because then I gave her what Flair says, minuscule calves.
There you go. Two words there, buddy. And you can really sum up this next match in two words was very interesting. You got the Giant and the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan, defeating Arn Anderson and Chris Benoit, 7.5 minutes. Another match that, you know, Dungeon of Doom versus the Horseman-esque kind of match. Didn't really need it.
But Benoit Sullivan was what they were really pushing in that. And I think there was an effort. I think this is one of the early efforts to blur the lines was being made.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe you were reading online about Woman and Sullivan and Chris Benoit, the love triangle.
Sure.
Even having Woman come out, Chris, stop it. You're going to hurt him. Mm-hmm. You know, I got tickled at the Giant trying to carry Sullivan all the way to the back, trying to step over the top rope without dropping him.
Yeah, I did too. I
saw all I could think is he's probably going to pinch one of his nuts on the top rope with all that weight on it.
Oh, goddamn. Yeah, that even hurts me.
Hey, but. Well, the reason I say that is that it's a constant effort when I get in the ring not to pinch my nuts on the second rope.
Oh, come on. Let's be honest. You go over the bottom rope. Come on, let's go. Let's be honest with this. Come on.
No, you go under if you go under the second rope or the bottom rope, you're a chick.
Yeah. Well, or you're small.
That's funny. That's, and I'm not trying to be funny. That's my concern when I step in the ring every time. You'll watch me. I'll get that one leg over and swing that other one quick because I'm just not that tall.
Yeah. You need a boost to get into the ring. But one thing I did want to get your thoughts on this is where would you rank Sullivan as a worker here in 96, even going forward?
Sullivan was, I mean.
Decent?
Yes. He wasn't, well, obviously, I mean, he wasn't five stars in the Tokyo Dome. He was he knew how to wrestle, but he knew how to brawl. I mean, he had the devil worshiper gimmick.
Right.
From Florida. So
he was more of a gimmick guy.
You were going to, you know, he was going to wrestle you, but he was going to hit you with that spike.
Right.
So, but no, Sullivan was very solid in the ring.
Sure. So the main reason why we're here, folks. The main event, the Outsiders, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall taking on Lex Luger, Sting, and Randy Savage for the six-man hostile takeover tag match. Gene's really trying to get out of everybody, the security backstage, who's the third man. He even goes as far as saying, hey, I know that voice. The voice sounds familiar to me. Obviously, hindsight being what it is now, it makes sense that he knew, maybe he didn't know. I don't know.
Did it stand out to you that there was no plug for the hotline?
Yeah.
That stood out to me.
Yeah.
Because I felt like he was going to a hotline plug and he didn't do it.
Yeah. But knowing what we know now, Hogan would be the third man. I always thought that it was more of a shocking way of it to kind of do it that way to the end. Oh, but Bobby would literally give it away.
Yes.
Is he part of the hostile or the third man? Is he this? Is he that? But he kind of lead more towards the other side.
Well, Bobby'd been telling us for years Hogan wasn't what he seemed.
Right. Yeah, but he was in the WWF. So
he was doing that since he was in the AWA.
Oh, true. Yeah.
So Bobby, this was like, hey guys, I told y'all.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that you all, I don't think people believed it was going to be Hogan. It was the rumor. Right. We all thought there's no way Hogan's going to do this. No way Hogan's going to do this.
Yeah.
And like I said, I thought it might be Savage, but then the match starts and Luger goes out early. Luger goes out early. So now you're thinking Luger's going to be back, but Luger's the third man.
Mm-hmm. That's who I thought it was going to be honest with you. All joking aside, I really thought it was Luger before he even got hurt. Going back and watching it after the fact.
I never suspected Sting, and we've come to learn out that Sting was the backup plan.
Right.
If Hogan wouldn't have done it.
Right. So Devin Dowling's here for your question. Can you remember who you thought was going to be the third man? Obviously, you said it was going to be
Savage.
I thought it was going to be Luger.
I pivoted to Luger when Luger went out early.
Yeah.
But I knew what was coming when.
You can even go as far as.
But I never believed Hogan was coming in for the save.
Oh, no.
When Hogan came out before Bobby said it, I'm like, he's going to do it. Hogan's going to do it.
But I even thought maybe they'd go to a younger talent, a la, stay with me on this, is Billy Kidman. Obviously, it wouldn't be as impactful as Hogan, obviously. But you're looking, okay, he's part of the flock. He's excommunicated out of the flock. You never know. He is, hindsight being what it is now, you know what kind of worker Kidman would end up being one of the better minds.
It wouldn't have took off. But if you're going to go down that road, Raven.
Yeah.
Raven might have.
Yeah.
But I don't think the NWO would have took off with Savage. I think it would have been short-lived with Savage. It would have been short-lived with Luger. And it might have worked with Sting, because Sting would have been as big a betrayal as Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
And I never considered Sting back then.
Right.
But
where would you rank, Brad Stanton here? I'm going to reword this question, Brad, because I know this is a rib. His original question was, why wasn't the impact of the NWO as strong as the flock, and Billy Kidman is the greatest character next to The Undertaker? I said, yeah, no, I'm going to reword that. So, because he knows, if you go back and listen to a past episode,
the flock was mid-card for life.
Yeah, Billy. He
no disrespect to those guys.
Billy Kidman's character was a meth addicted character. He said on a past episode where Justin and I talked about Billy Kidman as a 7-year itch as part of when he was part of the flock. So that's why, that's a little context behind that question. But
I didn't think meth at the time, but he did look like a complete burnout.
Yeah,
he was a burnout character for sure.
But that's why that was a whole flock-esque version of it. You know what I mean? Because they're trying to play off at this time. The whole Nirvana was big at this time. You know, the outcasts of the wrestling business. But, you know, like you said, I think just the Flock was more of a mid-card for life stable. They really weren't going to go anywhere up. They weren't going to go down, though. They served a purpose between – you could even keep it to three or four people, Raven, Billy, Saturn, and maybe, you know, Van Hammer or something. I don't know. Put a fourth in there.
I mean, I think that there should have been a time that the Flock could have rose up to make a strong challenge at the NWO.
Well, yeah, you could definitely book them that way.
And because that could have possibly worked.
Because, but, you know, a lot of that group, though, is very good workers between Saturn and Raven and Kidman, three of the better workers.
But there was no way that, I mean, as good as they were delegated to the cruiserweight spots. But even, and none of them seemed as a viable threat against Hall or Nash or Hogan,
But even Raven would become a U.S. champion. So maybe that's that mid-card-esque
Raven
is going to go.
Raven, you could see as a possible threat to Scott Hall or Kevin Nash.
I would even put Kidman. I'm a big fan of Billy Kidman.
I am too, but he was too small.
Right, but you would see him. You would see them try to put him against Hogan later. Much later with
much
him and
later
Hogan.
Though.
Yeah, when the writing was on the wall.
Yeah, I think Russo was there when that happened.
Yeah. Yeah, that was more. I think that was more towards late 99.
Russo saw potential in those smaller guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And hey, let's give a slow golf clap for Billy Kidman pulling Torrey Wilson. I mean, hell of a wrestler.
And while we're at it, screw you, David Flair, as well.
Always, forever.
Okay. Why not? He could. Why not? I'm sure he's heard it all at this point. So, Brian, we'll go with our last question here, and then we'll go over to Wrestling with Music. Is Brian Aremza wanted to know, is Hogan turning and joining the NWO at that time, is that the biggest shock in in wrestling history? Do you think?
Yes.
When I saw this, the only other thing I would put up against this, I don't know if comparing it is good or contract. Is when Shawn Michaels super kicked Marty Jannetty in the barbershop. But with that, though, you could kind of see the build to that.
The only thing I can think off the top of my head that was a bigger shock was Brock beating the Streak.
True.
No, but I mean, everybody, you silenced a stadium.
Yeah.
We have memes from crowd members now because that was a genuine shock. But no, the majority of the people did not see Hogan turning. And because sometimes we think, especially 1996, some of us that would read spoilers and the dirt sheets on and the rumors on the internet was very, very small part. So it wasn't like everybody in the arena knew. So I think, I mean, the Hulkamania, I mean, that was a genuine reaction with all the trash in the ring.
Yeah. Well, that becomes synonymous with WCW. If they didn't like you, they'd throw shit in the ring at you, you know?
And that was the tipping off point. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
That was definitely one of the top four moments in wrestling that changed how business was done.
Well, and it goes to the adage of two is like, if it wasn't for this, if it wasn't for the turn of Hogan, you wouldn't see this, or you wouldn't see that. If you didn't see this turn here in 96, you wouldn't see the likes of D-Generation X. Wouldn't see the likes of, honestly, if it wasn't for this, and this is maybe, I may get heat for this. This is a big statement, but without the Hogan turn, I don't think we would have seen Austin and McMahon.
You're right. The Hogan turn changed everything because their success from this became so great that Turner couldn't get rid of wrestling as quick as they wanted to.
And it would also force the hand of Vince McMahon.
Exactly. Because
the person, the character,
the attitude
of Mr.
era,
McMahon,
and everything after that was reactive.
Yeah.
That wasn't innovative. That was reactive. This was innovative. The NWO was innovative.
Yeah.
The Attitude Era was reactive.
You also take into account, too, this is what? We're in July of 96. November of 96, we all know what happens there. November of 97, we all know what happens there. The Montreal Screwjob. I don't think, like I said, that's another aspect of it too, Dave, is without this Hogan turning, the formation of the NWO, we don't see the Montreal Screwjob. We don't see Bret Hart becoming that dastardly heel, that anti-American, the pro-Canadian wrestler. We don't see the rise of Stone Cold Steve Austin.
You know, since you brought up the Montreal Screwjob, when I look back at it, Vince said to get rid of Bret because he said he couldn't afford to pay him.
I think it's a crock of shit, to be honest with you.
I think he just didn't like Bret. Yeah. Something had happened and he wanted Bret gone to the point of Bret can go be WCW's problem.
Well,
I don't buy that. I can't afford him.
Well, he can afford anybody. Trust me. He's fucking Vince McMahon. But
at the time,
I think he's seen him as an older guy that they're transitioning to the younger talent.
Something turned him off to Bret.
Yeah.
And that maybe that's something with Shawn Michaels.
Shawn might have gotten in his ear.
But, I mean, the Montreal Screwjob is what it is. But I don't buy that. I can't afford him. I buy that he's more trouble than he's worth and he's got to go.
Yeah. No, I get that.
That's how I feel. I don't buy that, especially with all the talent that was there. It's kind of like who was talking about Mick Foley. Mick Foley was talking about we don't have anything for you. We don't have anything for you. We're not getting in. But there was somebody new debuting every week, and he couldn't get in.
Right.
No, they wouldn't just tell him no, but he could see that it was very personal. They didn't want him.
Oh no! Yeah, you definitely saw the writing on the walls for that. That's your damn sure. But I just think Vince would always go with the adage of we're trying to go with the younger talent, all that stuff. I think there's a certain
and the reason it works so well is because Vince was the be all end all. Like I said, this was reactive. This was reactive to the NWO, yeah. But Vince was able to say, okay, well, we're going to take out all of our heavy artillery. We're going to take out our nuclear bombs. We're going to take out everything, and we're going to hit them with everything that we got. And then you just had WCW bowing up saying, okay, Eric, this is working for you, but you can't do this, this, and this anymore. So you're going to fight them with a Swiss Army knife.
Sure. Well, you got to fight or something.
But give us that toothpick out of it, because you can't have that.
Right.
So it was a one-sided fight at that point. And Vince McMahon was not going to lose. And he reacted with what he needed to do, and he did it better.
Well, even the way he reacted, it changed the business for the good, for the bad. That's obviously open to your interpretation and your opinion, Ivan, and everything. You, me, everybody in the business that follow the business, that are fans of the business, it's open to them. But, like I said, it's a chain reaction. If it wasn't for this specific event, for this specific match, for this specific turn, we wouldn't see half the business the way it is today. We wouldn't see, we go even the far as saying if the NWO never happened, we wouldn't see AEW. You know, was there times where, you know, they should have done certain things certain ways later on? Sure. Obviously, we'll get into that the rest of the month here, where we go Bash at the Beach. We start here with this iconic event, and we're going to go forward all the way until the last Bash at the Beach, which was in 2000. So we're going to see that as we go throughout this month. But before we do that, let's send it over to Elijah to hit the button.
Let's get musical. Let me hear your body talk.
The segment that everybody's here for, the segment, the rankings that everybody wants to be a part of. Dave, it's Wrestling with Music. If you are listening right now and you don't know what it is, we are basically ranking every wrestling music theme song that is associated with a specific event. Or at this point, we're just basically saying, hey, give us whatever you want. You know, we're adding two from our listeners. Dave, you have one. I have one. Once we get to 100, Dave, we are going to be switching our rankings to something else. So at this point, we're at 78 entrants right now. We're going to get over 80 finally. So we're on the fast track to 100. Thank God, because a lot of people want to put their two cents into this, Dave.
Yeah, it's a red hot issue.
Oh, yeah. I get DMs on the daily. Oh, this should be here. This should be there. Sorry. It's subjective. You can certainly put your own rankings out too and tag us if you want. Tag us at @ringsiderant, at JD2040, or at Ponwater Dave.
I didn't hear from Eddie this week, so we must have done good last week.
Well, I thought he sent, maybe it was last week that he sent me something. I can't remember. But anyways, with that being said, I'm going to start off with a bang here. Dave, a guy that is the personification of intensity is Mr. Dean Malenko, the Iceman. So Iceman Dean Malenko.
What a perfect music for an intense wrestler.
If anything's more fitting for this specific wrestler, it's Dean Malenko. That's the way it is. As far as popularity, I don't think people really know. As far as you hear this theme, you don't know that it's Dean Malenko. I get a lot of the times too, some people get confused between Dean Malenko and Rey Mysterio WCW themes because they're so very similar. As far as ranking them, I would really put him down towards Brock Lesnar here at 50. Just because it's along the same lines where it's kind of a more of a repetitive theme.
Yeah.
A la like a Bobby Lashley, it's in the same aspect, same area here. APA is in the same area as here. Brock Lesnar, same area. That's where I would put him personally, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I mean, we'll make when we re-rank, Kyle, we'll make a stronger argument for Brock because you can name that tune in two notes. So.
Oh yeah. Well, no, I get that too. And we'll get that. Like you said, we'll get that round table. That's what Eddie was talking to me about. It was, he wanted to be part of the round table. That's what it was.
We're going to go to, since yours was, I don't know. Mine should be second after yours.
Sure.
Because you mentioned the Iceman, I'm going to mention the true Iceman, the Iceman King Parsons. In the 1982.
You can keep going, Dave.
1982, this was the jam. You heard this, and here he's coming down the aisle from St. Louis, Missouri, weighing 230 pounds. The Iceman King Parsons.
We got to make sure we don't play this as long as we do because it's going to get copyrighted tag or something.
Yeah.
We'll give it another about 20 seconds just to get the point out crossed.
It's the first verse and then you can drop it. He's wiggling, shaking his legs, shaking his head, making those braids go.
Yeah.
Oh man, the Iceman was a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous talent. But But the song needs, you'd probably go down and put like 79.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, it's copyright. I mean, it wasn't original music. It was.
Well, I'll give them. How about 78? Just because I want to put him above Hogan's theme.
Okay, that'll work. I mean, I can't sit here and make a strong. I mean, as far as a great song, and it was used for everybody. I mean, World Series champions. I think it was when Pittsburgh won the World Series, they played "We Are Family."
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there was, but that's one of those that you kids aren't gonna.
You're not gonna know.
I mean, it's when you hear a song on the radio, and the first thing it does is it takes you back to a wrestling moment. You know, "Eye of the Tiger," I'll never forget Hogan coming out of the tunnel at Madison Square Garden to go beat the Iron Sheik. Sure. "We Are Family" is the Iceman. Rick Rude is smooth operator. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Garvin and the Fantastics were sharp dressed man.
Crazy.
And then, of course, Tom Sawyer. Tom Sawyer, LaGrange, "Texas When I Die," Freebird.
Yeah.
Freebird before Michael Hayes redid it. Right. So, I mean, those are just the cool part about unlicensed music and pro wrestling. And I mean, the examples today, Cult of Personality is forever going to be linked to CM Punk.
Oh, without question.
Jungle Boy, when you hear Tarzan. Wild Thing with Moxley.
Mm-hmm. And AEW, that's what AEW is doing now. They're buying out the rights to these songs so they can play them.
So there's a lot to be said. There's a lot to be said for original music, but there's a lot to be said for licensed.
Sure. I get that. So our listener additions this week, this is coming to us from Mr. Devin Dowling. It is Billy Kidman. You can run if you want to. Yeah, run, cause you can't hide. So you can run if you want to. Run, cause you can't hide. I see you don't know who you dealing with, but I don't have it all. I'm a lunatic, cause see society, they label me a threat. But I'm just getting started, I'm not finished yet. Look me in my eyes, I can see your thoughts. All your ups and downs, all your little faults. Keep acting tough, it's gonna get creepy. All of a sudden you start in the field sleepy. But in these streets when you doze off, you wake up with your clothes off. A shame feeling so lost, whoa. You see my crew, you know my style. Victory is mine, you're going down. All right, Dave, so.
That's a horrible song, put it last.
You think so?
Yes.
I liked it,
I'm gonna say what that World Wrestling Federation Billy Kidman filled out and looked like a wrestler more than grunge. I like WWE Billy Kidman much better than grunge WCW Billy Kidman.
Right.
He bulked up.
I would say that if you sit there and you listen to the lyrics about it through that whole song, you don't know what to expect from him. He's an outcast. He's this, he's that.
If you would have played 10 more seconds of that song, I would have took this pair of scissors and jammed it in my ear. Because if I'm going to hurt that bad, I'm going to do it to myself.
Wow. Wow. Well, hey, good luck work. Good luck working tonight with an ear contusion.
No, it's just.
At least then you have an excuse.
I just didn't relate it to Billy Kidman. It did not strike me.
I just like the beat, though. But if you look at that, this is post-2002 Billy Kidman.
Yeah. So
you kind of, it's kind of one of those things where you kind of go with the times. I personally like it because this is something that you put in your playlist when you're working out. This is something that you put in your playlist before you go out for, you work on a show or something. This is something that you listen to. Would I rank it high? Not really. I would honestly, I think if you're looking at the list right now on the shared screen, I would put it about 72, just under Disco Inferno, because I think that's Disco's music was good for him.
Yes, it screamed Disco Inferno.
Saturn was his music was kind of repetitive, so I would
Disco's
put it
music,
in that category.
Disco's music stood out to me on the pay per view.
Yeah,
that's why I texted you and said, "Hey, is Disco on the list yet?"
Yeah,
because it was the main theme song that I was like, "Oh man, that is so." I'd forgotten how good his theme music was.
So I'm gonna put it right there at 72, to be honest with you, Dave, because okay. that it's still above his WCW here at 77. I think it's better than Brett's WCW. It's better than Buff, Bagwell, Rick Martel, all the rest of them down there. I think it's still better than that. But our last addition from our fans this week, it comes to us from Bryant Haremza. I don't know if you remember this one, Dave, so I'll play it and see if you remember. It's rated RKO when Edge and Randy Orton were a tag team in the 2000s here. So with that being said,
you think you know me.
So this is the first time that you're really going to see a theme song, two theme songs, two of the better theme songs.
Number 20. Got to be at least 20.
We've seen that they've combined. Because at this time, they're really, as you know, they are coming out into as individuals. I want to look here because I know we have Edge on here. I can't remember where we put him. I think he's higher up. There he is at 19. Edge's theme alone is 19. So, I
didn't even want to know what was around him, but immediately my head jumped.
Right.
Like 11 was the first number that came into my mind. And then as the song went on, I was like, it's at least 20. But I didn't want to know who was around it because that always. Once we start doing that, I'm looking like, man.
Yeah.
Because then I start picking apart the placement of the other songs.
I would tend to agree with you on that. Being right around 20, I would put them right at 20. Because
no higher than 11, but 20 seems accurate. That was really good.
Because I just think it's two great themes coming together. Obviously, with Edge, Edge alone being at 19 is good enough, I think, because we haven't ranked Randy Orton yet, whether it be this theme or the voices. So maybe that's something going forward we can get one of our loyal listeners to suggest, and we'll rank that because that's an iconic theme too. So the combination of that makes it even better, I think.
Oh, has voices not made the list yet?
Nope.
Huh. It will next week.
There you go. There you go, folks. A little peek behind the curtain.
We ought to go bonus and just go ahead and throw voices at number 5. That is such a good song.
Well, you know what, Dave? With that being said, let's go over and listen to that right now. We're actually going to have a fifth this week because I have to, because now that you said that, I have to do it.
Voices not being in there is more shocking than Bad Street USA not being any higher.
So with that being said, we're going to bring in Elijah here to hit the button yet again.
That's good musical. Let me hear your body talk.
Voices in my head, they count to me, they understand, they talk to me.
right, man. I gotta cut it off. Hey, I gotta cut it off.
Do you get an email when we? Do you get an email on a copyright violation?
Well, you know that I haven't got one yet.
you get one, I want a copy of it because that was worth it.
Oh, that was definitely worth it.
And what's even more amazing is I have only recently come to start appreciating Randy Orton. Because I have hated his guts.
Yeah.
Because he spit in Harley Race's face.
And Mick Foley.
No, I'm telling you what it did. He spit in a lot of faces.
Gotcha.
When he spit in Harley Race's face, I had legitimately been hot at him. And what's funny is then being in the business and knowing how it works, and I'm still hot at him. That's how good a heel Randy Orton is.
Oh, hell yeah. Him, Kurt Angle, and Chris Jericho, those three guys, I saw their careers from beginning to end. I'm not saying Randy's over, Jericho's over, whatever. Kurt Angle officially came out and said, I'm no longer going to be in the ring. That just came out yesterday. He officially retired. Those three guys, I saw Randy Orton debut on SmackDown. He has been low-key, seriously, whether he's a heel, face, whatever, he's been my favorite wrestler of all time. Kurt Angle, same way. Jericho, same way. My three favorite of all time. This right here, Dave, I would put him at 6. I would put him top 10.
Yeah, I said 5, so 5-6 is good. I mean,
I would put him at 6 because I just, and it has nothing to do with him being my favorite wrestler of all time. I just think this is one of the best themes of all time.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that you would listen to in your car and not you. If it's in your music library and you're playing everything on shuffle and this song comes up, you don't fast forward to the next song. You'll actually listen to it.
Yeah. You know what? Screw it. I'm putting it at 5. Screw it.
There you go.
I don't care. I'm going to piss Justin off, but he's not here and I really don't care. Because Randy Orton's my favorite wrestler. One of my favorite wrestlers of all time is Brett is his.
Justin is calling balls and strikes. We don't care what Justin thinks today.
Yeah, well, yeah. I keep that comment to myself.
I'm in a group chat with Justin. I'm going to rub it in.
Go ahead. Dave?
Oh, you're trying
I'm taking a screenshot of this right now. I'm going to text it to him just to piss him off. So with that being said, Dave, that's going to be our Wrestling with Music this week. Next week, Dave, we'll see what happens next week. Cause we may have you back next week too. We don't know what's going on. It's at that time of the year, folks. I know I've explained it to a few of you that have contacted me online at _ringside rant. This time of the year, it's very hard for Justin because he's doing a lot of umping. He does tournaments all weekend. I can't fault him for that because he makes good money doing this. He travels just like you do. He travels hours away to go do these tournaments. And I told him, I said, dude, shoot your shot, man. If we can work it out, great. If not, we love having you on. I love having you on. And I know I just felt that it was a need to kind of explain why he wasn't showing up. It's nothing going on between Justin and me, has nothing to do with that. It's just that he's working, you know, he's out of school. He has, you know, he has money coming in now and he loves doing it. He's been doing it. Justin and I have known each other for probably
Justin told me he would miss this show to power wash a sidewalk.
Oh yeah.
To regrout the bathtub, shower.
Wash his dogs. His dogs.
I mean, no, the dogs. Now he'll do the dogs before anything. the dogs take precedence over anything, but I mean, well, so but no.
Yeah, but seriously,
I'm kidding.
No, of course, why am I? But I just felt like I needed to let everybody know that it has nothing. It's nothing. Nothing's going on. Everybody's healthy. Everybody's happy.
He hates RJ. He trashes him all the time.
Well, but see, that's the thing, Dave. We've known each other for so long. That would have happened by now. We've known each other for almost four or five years at this point.
I'm stirring it this morning, baby.
You got to play that. You got a 4-hour drive with the wife ahead of you. You're going to be gone. you're going to be in the car that long. You might as well stir it. So you got something to talk about. But next week, barring unforeseen issues, we'll have you back again next week, seeing what's going on with that. We may not. I don't know what's going on. You guys will find out when we find out. But
we're having a 4th of July party here at the house next Saturday. So.
Well, there you go. Oh, yeah. 4th of July is next week. Anyways, so next week, we went over 96 Beach Bash at the Beach this week. Next week, we're going to be going over the 1997 Bash at the Beach, which was headlined by Lex Luger and the Giant taking on Hollywood Hogan and Dennis Rodman. Yes, that Dennis Rodman, the Worm from the famous Chicago Bulls, Detroit Pistons.
Rodzilla.
Yeah. This is that time, 97, they're really... It's like Conrad said, 97 was the best time in the business across the board.
Dennis Rodman, we used to hear about him, how good a basketball player was from his mother. His mother used to shop at our grocery store. Dennis Rodman went to Roosevelt High School in Dallas,
mm-hmm.
and which wasn't real far from our grocery store.
Sure.
So, I mean, when I think of Brett Rodman, I don't really remember ever meeting Dennis. But I remember his mother,
right,
was a really good customer, and she always talked about how good a basketball player her son was.
Right. Well, yeah, but one of the best of all time.
Bar none.
But with that being said, you can hit us up online at @_ringsiderant, or just simply go over to castbuy.com/. There you go. I'm a good sayer of words. /ringsiderant. All our platforms are there. All our social media is there. Merchandise store is there. All the platforms, Shining Wizard Wrestling Network, full press coverage, Wrestling with Johnners. Thank you so much for the three of you for allowing us on your network. Dave, shoot out your credentials as well.
I'm Palm Water Dave. I'm at Palm Water Dave on Twitter.
Short, simple, to the point. He's actually going to be coming out with a new shirt. Dawkins. Hopefully we can trademark that now so some other schmucks can't use that.
The machine's not taking my job, Daddy.
Amen to that. So we will see you right back here next week in Ranters Nation.